Hey, Colette, what's going on?
Racking them and stacking them. How about you?
Well, as always, I am living the dream.
I can see the open collar. I can tell. Well, what will it be?
Oh, what am I feeling like today? Well, hey, anything on special?
Well, there's always the tiki love bowl, but I have to set it on fire before I serve it to you, and that's kind of a nice tie.
Yeah, let's stay away from open flames today. I'll just have the usual.
Sounds good. Hey, hold on one second. Another customer just walked in. Hey, how are you? What will it be today? Who, that guy? That's David. Well, as we know him, D. Fish. He's sort of an all-purpose business talker. Yep, speaking, writing, podcasts, training. He is always talking to somebody about business or music or beer. You never know which way it's going to go, but it's always interesting. In fact, why don't I grab your drink and you go over there and join them?
Hey there. Welcome to season 3 of the B3 podcast. It's great having you here for another round of interesting conversations with interesting people. In fact, to kick things off, today we have a great conversation with my friend, Dr. Michelle Mazur. Here's a taste of what she shared.
You're really bad at this speaking thing, and you should talk to Michelle is not a great intro for me either. But it's hard to gently say to someone like, oh, you have a great message, and I know it could be so much better, or it has so much potential, because it's still saying like, you didn't do so well up there.
And there's more where that came from. So grab your glass, grab your seat. You're about to join us on Beer, Beats, and Business. Michelle, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
As always, I am living the dream. And I want to welcome not only you, but the listener to the beginning, the official beginning of season 3 of Beer, Beats, and Business.
Aw, yeah. I am so excited.
I am too, although I'm a little nervous to have you on today because we're only usually about a half an hour show. And I feel we could end up talking for about 3 or 4 hours.
So but nobody's going to want to listen to that.
No, not even us. Like, we'd be listening to the playback and be like, no, we're done. So we're going to try to keep it focused.
Yes.
And here's where I want to start with you. What can professional stand-up comedians teach us, the average professional speaker, about how to be a better speaker?
This is an awesome question. And a few years ago, I was a social media manager for a conference. And so I was in the audience being the person who was tweeting and Facebook message, you know, Facebook posting about this conference. And they had, as part of the lineup, it was about comedy, humor, and improv. So they had professional comedians speak about comedy. And I loved those speakers because comedians are so succinct with their thoughts and with their sentences that they were highly tweetable. Like, I'd be listening to a comedian and I could like find 7 tweets easily from their speech.
Were you telling them to slow down? Like, wait, stop, hold on a second, pause, let me tweet that.
I know, I wish I could. I was like, oh my gosh, that's good. Oh, that's a good line. Oh, that's a tweetable. And then there were the other speakers where I would be listening to their message and then I'm trying to cull together something that was tweetable because they weren't as precise with their language. And why comedians are so successful is because they have mastered their craft and have a precision around their language and they only want to use as many words as they absolutely need because that's what makes it funny.
Right.
You have to have the right words. And the time it takes to craft those right words is something I wish more speakers would take time with when they're writing their talks. Too many speakers are like, oh, you know, I just go and I have my points, but, you know, I just kind of talk off the cuff. And when you do that, you don't have that precision in language that comedians have. And that's what speakers should really strive for.
Well, I think you're exactly right about that precision of language. In fact, I wrote an article once about this very topic, And one of the things that I really liked is looking at the whole kind of set that a good stand-up comedian does, how they actually are very strategic. One of my favorites is Chris Rock, and especially his old material. He is the master. I think I've never seen anybody use an anchor better than him, right? An anchor where you say something and you keep coming back to it over and over again. And he does that every stand-up special he has. He has one line that he goes back to over and over and over again, and it builds resonance and it builds just kind of this momentum. So by the end, it's always the last line of his show. He's said it like 7 or 8 times and it gets this huge laugh. And I think about it just from an influence point of view, like when you're selling, or, you know, obviously when you are speaking and you're trying to persuade an audience, the idea of coming back to something that's powerful and relevant and just hammering it. I mean, it's so good. It's so powerful.
People shoot heroin and go, you know, red meat will kill you. What do you mean red meat will kill you? Only in America will we say some wrong shit like red meat will kill you. What do you mean red meat will kill you? People are starving all over the world. What do you mean red meat will kill you? No. Don't eat no red meat? No. Don't eat no green meat, okay?
And it takes structure and strategy and that precision of language to make it happen. And I feel that speakers can be very sloppy with that because they think, oh, well, you know, I have my main points and then I'm just going to talk and it's going to be fine. But if you want to pull something off like an anchor, you have to have that strategy and structure and that precision in place. Otherwise, it is not going to go well. So I'd love to see speakers really work on their precision of language.
Absolutely. Who are your some of your favorite stand-ups as far as kind of their knowing their craft?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, first comes to mind is George Carlin.
Yep.
Kind of, yeah, he was a master of his craft, and I just loved it. And I love Robin Williams because of his stand-up and how improv-driven he is. Like, he did this bit on Inside Actor Studio where he took a woman's handkerchief and just improvised around it for, like, 5 minutes.
It's great.
Yeah, it's funny, and it was hysterical. And it's like, wow, how does your brain have to work? I forget what his name is. He is Australian and he's very, very edgy. He has this great stand-up skit about gun control in the United States. And it's powerful. Like Jim Jefferies. Thank you. He's making a very powerful point in a very funny way.
I've had people come up to me in my face and scream at me in car parks as I'm going, leaving the theater, going, you cannot change the Second Amendment. And I'm like, yes, you can. It's called an amendment. Like, if you can't change something, it's called an amendment. See, many of you need a thesaurus more than you need a constitution.
I love all those. I think edgy, you know, Louis C.K. is kind of put out there and obviously very popular, very famous right now. But I think people don't realize that if you do a little digging into kind of somebody like Louis C.K.'s background, how much work he puts in to it. Like, people just think he's kind of this naturally sardonic and dark person, which he probably is, but he's not. The person he is up on stage is not who he is in real life. Like, he's crafted that message within an inch of its life. Like, he knows exactly every little bit he's going to say, every inflection, and he's crafted it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see people, as you use that amount of craft to their work. I think it's funny you said, talk about improv, because I've actually done some improv training here in Chicago, and people think that improv is like Robin Williams. Oh, he's just making stuff up as he goes along. But there's actually rules to it, right?
Yes. Yeah. There's structure to it. And nobody thinks about that, but there is. There's like rules and a structure to improv.
Okay. So, you know, obviously we can't all be professional comedians when we're doing our presentations, but what are some of the basic things that you see in your work people just completely mess up besides not crafting their language carefully?
Number one is too much information. Far and away, I feel like speakers are trying to cram as much as possible into their speech instead of thinking strategically about what their audience actually needs. It's like, I'm this expert and you're paying me this money to come in and speak, so I'm going to present all of the things in an hour, whether you want them or not. And that leaves the audience feeling overwhelmed and not knowing what to do with the information. So that's a big one I see. And the second one is we live in this age of storytelling. And it's like, oh, tell your story. Your story has power. It's meaningful. But people are sometimes telling their story for their story's sake, and there's nothing in it for the audience. Like, you're telling me your origin story, and I'm like, why are you telling me this? Why is this important? What am I supposed to take away from this? Because I just feel like your story is not enough to make you a compelling speaker. There has to be something in it for the audience, because that's why you're getting paid. You're right. Getting paid to solve some type of problem or challenge for the audience. And I don't care how good your story is, it's not going to be enough.
You're absolutely right. I remember early on in my sales career, hearing a speaker who had climbed Mount Everest, right? And it actually took him 3 tries to get up Mount Everest. And he was a great storyteller, but that's not why he was an amazing speaker. But we didn't care about his story. We cared about how his story related to what we were going through in our lives, because we were never going to climb, or at least most of the room was never going to climb Mount Everest, right?
No.
But he did such a great job of going, here's what we were dealing with or working on as human beings going up this huge mountain. And then he related it to us, right? And I think that's what you're saying, is you've got to relate your story to what your audience cares about, which is themselves.
Yes. I call that the story turnaround. Like, how do you bring your audience into the story, and what are they supposed to take away? Like, what's the lesson in your story? Often I'll say to a client, we're working on something, I'm like, why are you telling your audience this? What's the point? Sometimes they pause and they're like, I don't know.
That's when you take a big old X right across that page.
Nope. Yeah, it's like, nope. And we're not doing this. Like, if you can't tell me why it's here other than you like telling this story, then it doesn't belong in a presentation.
Yeah. So I'm curious, do you actually like listening to presentations? Are you the kind of person who can sit there in the audience or listen, or do you get like way too antsy, or are you sitting there critiquing and you want to yell at them? Or
I struggle with this, and I love this question because it's something I wish people would ask me more often. I do really struggle with this. So when I show up in an event, I want to be present with the speaker and with their message and what I'm supposed to take away from the message. And I find the more I pay for events, the more I'm able to do that. However, when I go to like local events or networking events where there's a speaker, I get very antsy, and I'm trying to like control my brain, like from saying things like, what is the point of this? Or when they're doing something that's very formulaic, like, can I tell you a secret? No, I don't want to hear your secret. That's what my brain is saying. And I have to reel it in, because I get really frustrated, and I get frustrated for the audience because we're not having a good experience. And I also get frustrated for the speaker because they're blowing a big opportunity, and most of the time they don't even know it. And I've seen speeches at professional events where I'm like, you are causing your brand damage by speaking. Like, either get help to do this well and to master the craft, or don't do it.
You just want to go up to them afterwards, give them your card, and say, I'm here to help.
Yes. And the weird thing about it is, it's really hard for me to go up to someone and do that. And I know my clients have felt the same way. They'll be like, I have a friend who's a speaker and they're just terrible. And I'm trying to figure out how to tell them that they really need to work with you without making it sound like you suck and that's sad. Get some help.
Well, and I've actually run into that in the past with my coaching practice where people are like, I really know my friend needs to talk to you. And I go, okay, well, let's look at the ways to address this because you're completely screwing up your business and you should talk to D is not a good introduction for me, right?
I know. It's like, you're really bad at the speaking thing and you should talk to Michelle is not a great intro for me either. But it's hard to gently say to someone like, oh, you know, you have a great message and I know it could be so much better or it has so much potential because it's still saying like, you didn't do so well up there.
Right, right. And but what's interesting is maybe more of us should be saying that to people because there's so much, so many bad messages out there. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not very good. Just even great messages. Like I've seen some great keynotes and presentations in my day. Mm-hmm. And I just know like I'm just not wired to sit down and like sit still and pay attention for that long.
Yeah.
I always joke there's a reason I became a speaker. It's because I couldn't sit in the audience. So I figured I might as well be on the stage.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I do like this trend towards shorter talks, like 20-minute talks, because I have worked on speeches where it's like, I have to do a 90-minute keynote. And I'm like, no one wants to listen to you for 90 minutes. No one.
I don't, there's maybe a handful of people in the world who are interesting enough that people want to hear from them for 90 minutes. And I'm being very specific when I say a handful.
Yes.
Here's a question. If somebody was going to work on a presentation, they've got a speech coming up, either they're doing this professionally already like me, or they're somebody who's just got to do a big presentation, maybe for their board, or they got invited to speak at a professional conference. What's the first place? Like if they came and talked and, you know, asked you, I need to get help. I need to get better. What's the first place they should look at improving? What's the first step?
The first step with me is always looking at what the audience needs from you and what is their number one challenge. And what I have found is most speakers don't actually understand the problem that they can solve for the audience. So a great example of this, I run this challenge called Get the Speech, Get the Gig. And people do it and like day three is what's the audience's number one challenge? And I remember someone who speaks about blogging, she wrote, well, you know, their number one challenge is like, why do I need a blog? I'm like, oh, no,
nope.
No. I'm like, no one is sitting up at night going, oh my gosh, do I need a blog? I mean, there might be a small percentage of people who are very solution aware that blogging can get them more visibility or more traffic or whatever it is. But that is not the problem they're having. So getting very specific on like, what is the number one challenge and what does my audience need from me that I can deliver in 20 minutes or less? Because you don't want to overwhelm them, but you have to get into their head and figure out who they are when they walk into the door. Like, what are they thinking about? What do they already believe? And that is the basis of starting to write a great talk. And if you're not thinking about the audience and you're thinking about, oh my gosh, I can't wait to tell them this and I have this story and it's going to be awesome and I'm going to talk about this, that is the start of a very bad speech.
Exactly. I remember listening to a lecture series on rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. So just, you know, kind of like the nuts and bolts of speaking. And there's this great line. It was a guy named Drought, Drout. I'll put him in the show notes. But he goes, rhetoric is not about what you want to say. It's about what they need to hear. And it just resonated with me. I'm like, oh yeah, it's not about, ooh, I want to tell this story. It's, does the audience need to hear this story? Does it actually click with their problems and what the solution might be? And it's such a simple perspective change. But once you do that, your message gets like 10 times better automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'd like to point out to our listener and to everybody else, that was the perfect way of pitching your material in an interview. That was awesome. And I loved it. So I just wanted to give you a shout out for that. And I actually know all your material, so you should definitely check out Michelle's stuff.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, we have a lot of meta conversations on B3 here. You know, why not?
Part of that is like I teach my clients how to do that as well. So.
Exactly. So you know your stuff. I always love when I have to be like, well, as I say in, you know, on chapter 3 of my book, Networking in the 21st Century. I love it. All right. Well, here, let's switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
Well, actually, we're going to talk about beer for way too long. But before we do that, I actually want to ask you about your business, because one of the things I love is having people like me, kind of like entrepreneurs, people who are building their own thing. I know we've actually talked about this before, where you're looking to make some shifts in your business, you know, kind of making it a little more Michelle friendly, right? Mm-hmm. So you can do like, you know, more of the things that you want to do. What's the biggest shift you're looking to make in your business in the next upcoming year?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've decided to do is offer more of a mentorship program with me, where, because for the past year, I've been helping people like write these rock star speeches that are getting them gigs and getting them paid. And that's awesome. And I love it. But I crave intimacy and depth in my business. I really value those two things. And I want to work with people in more of a mentorship capacity. So, you know, like where we work either 3 to 6 months, and we define what that project looks like. So it could look like looking at the speech you have and optimizing it and making it better and figuring out your pricing strategy and pitching and researching for speaking gigs. Or maybe it's more of like, I'm just starting out. I need to figure out what my strategy is here and write the speech. And then we can talk a little bit about pitching. But having that flexibility, because I realized I was leaving a lot of my talents and gifts off the table with my one-on-one work. And I would provide it for my clients like, oh yeah, let me help you like research like strategies for researching speaking gigs, or, oh, here's my stuff on pitching. And I'm like, why am I just not including that and making something that's a deeper offering where I can work with people longer and really help them launch their speaking careers or take their speaking business to the next level of success that they want.
Very cool. So I like this idea of not offering services. Just what I didn't hear you say is, oh, I'm adding all these services on because I'm trying to make some more money from people.
No, no.
But instead, no. And this is awesome. This is like kind of this way of authenticity of saying, I actually want more of X in my life. Like you talked about this desire for intimacy and really this depth. And you've kind of said, well, how do I get that? Oh, more of a long-term approach to a client relationship.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, and I do end up having these relationships with my clients that, you know, they email me and ask me a question. And I was like, why am I not structuring my business so that I can work with less people in a more deep and intimate way? And that's what I'm currently working on.
Very, very cool. I look forward to seeing how that all pans out for you. That'll be awesome. All right. So I want to switch gears here a little bit. We're going to talk about beer. But before I do that, I do want everybody to know that they're listening to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, D Fish. My guest today is Dr. Michelle Mazur, the CEO of Communication Rebel. She is the author of 2 best-selling books, including Speak for Impact and Speak Up for Your Business. And she helps speakers and entrepreneurs write the keynote speech that they want to be known for. And she helps them book more speaking gigs and basically helping them get paid while making a difference to the audience.
Yep.
And Michelle, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, the hub for everything Michelle and Communication Rebel is at drmichellemazur.com. But if you want to interact with me more directly, I do run a Facebook group called The Rebel Speaker, and you can get there by going to drmichellemazur.com/group.
Love it. And while you're on the interwebs, feel free to reach out to us here at B3 as well. We do have a Facebook group. I'm on Twitter at dfishrockstar. And you can always check out our home base of beerbeatsandbusiness.com. But now to the important stuff. Michelle, you're based out of Seattle. The next time I am up in Seattle, what brews should I be checking out? Because there's some great ones up there, but what are your favorites?
Oh, yeah. So number one, I would say, would be Rooftop Brewery. They do some really interesting beers. They brought out their winter beer, their Christmas beer in July for a week, and it was fantastic. Okay. It was dark and malty, and it had all kinds of great, like, cardamom and cinnamon spices. But they also do some, I'm not a big IPA girl, but there's this one that is like the Creamsicle Gateway IPA that's like an orangey vanilla one that I love.
Wow.
Yes,
okay.
So that's delicious. I also recommend Stoop. They do a pretty kick butt porter that I love. But also in the summer, they have a really interesting Hefeweizen that has a lot of floral to it. So they like to experiment with some botanicals. So I really enjoy that. There is Cloudburst Brewery, which was started by one of the brewmasters that did Elysian, but Elysian got bought out, I think, by Anheuser-Busch. So he left and he's like doing his own thing. And Cloudburst was the most anticipated nano brewery opening. And then finally, I'd recommend Fremont Brewery because A, it's in my neighborhood. And they have really fantastic beer. Every winter they do their Abominable Ale, and it's a bourbon barrel aged beer. And it's fantastic.
That sounds awesome. I mean, that's actually a really great segue for me to talk about our beer of the show, which is, by the way, kind of a new thing. So I kind of feel like an old timey radio announcer. Hey there, by the way, Sketchbook Brewery right here in Evanston, Illinois. But they're a nano brewery in my hood, and I'm drinking their Lapwing, which is a Scottish ale. And this is just their normal Lapwing, but they do a bourbon barrel version of it that always like sells out in the first 2 days, and it's delicious. So I do want to give Sketchbook and all the team out there a shout out drinking their beer today. It's awesome. But so are you a dark beer person, or are you a light beer? You said you're not an IPA gal.
Not an IPA. I do like, in the winter, I love dark beer. So I'm definitely a stout porter girl. Maui Brewing Company has a really good coconut porter that I love. But in the summer, I do like lighter beers, but I'm also really into sours. There's in Portland.
You're the one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out who drinks these. Apparently it's you.
I drink them. I love sour beer. Breakside Brewery in Portland has a great one. If you're ever in Portland, there's the Cascade Barrel House that all they serve is sours. I mean, it's definitely not everyone's jam, but people who really like their sours love them.
Hey, and as I've gone on record saying, whatever beer floats your boat, I absolutely support you. But sours are tough. Sours and IPAs, just not my cup of tea. But I'm excited, because we're getting towards the colder months. There are many more dark options out there this time of year.
I love Christmas beer. Like, that's definitely my jam. So we're getting into Christmas time, and there's like Maritime Brewing here in Seattle, and they do this Jolly Roger ale. And I think it's almost 12%. Like, it's 12% beer. So you, like, the first time I ever had one, I didn't know how potent they were. And I was like out on a date with my now husband, and I had a pint of it, and I was like, oh, this is really good. I ordered a second pint, and I was blotto.
Wow. They were serving it in pints?
Oh, yeah, boy. They shouldn't do that, but they do.
I love when you go to the brewery and they give you the beer in like the little fancy kind of tulip glass. And at this point in my life, now I realize why they're doing that. You're like, oh, all right, I can only have two of these, and then I'm done.
Yep.
I was actually, this is fitting, I was at Sketchbook because they're in my neighborhood the other day, and they had a black Saison, which was delicious. But I think it was like an 11% ABV, and it comes in this little, you know, snifter, and you're like, okay, there's not much there. So I'm going to sip this. I had two of them, and I'm like, I'm going to have a really nice walk home right now.
Exactly.
Well, and so, and you're a coffee person too, right?
Yeah, I'm a total coffee person. I live in Seattle.
I mean, you live in Seattle, right? Right. So yeah. But you were, I think you were talking to, telling me about, you went to Hawaii and saw the Kona.
Yes.
Like operation. What was that like?
That was amazing. So we went to a coffee plantation and it was all organic. And when we went, I finally realized why Kona coffee is so expensive, because they only use the best of the best beans. And that's 10% of like their whole crop. And the process that they go through to like dry and roast the beans and package them, I'm like, all right, this is why it's like $20 for a bag of Kona coffee. But it's delicious. It's like more of a mellow coffee. I really enjoy Kona.
There's actually a craft brewery out in Hawaii that the name is totally escaping me. Mm-hmm. They make a longboard lager, which is actually not
Kona.
A bad lager.
Yeah, it's the Kona Brewing Company.
It is theirs, because I remember there was somebody that made a porter with Kona coffee in it. And I didn't know if that was actually their brewery. So it's theirs. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the Big Island, since we just went there, there are three breweries. So Kona is the largest one, and they have an alliance with Red Hook here in Seattle to get their beer to the mainland. There is the Big Island Brew House, which was my favorite. Their wheat beer is excellent, and it's small batch. It's a small place. They have great Mexican food. And then they have Mehana, which we didn't get to, but they brew their beer with rainwater. They're in Hilo.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking it makes complete sense that a Hawaiian brewery would make wheat beer, because there's so much wheat in Hawaii. They're obviously locally sourced, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And they try to really locally source things, but not every, like, obviously they're not getting their hops there.
Right. Well, that's good to know that even in a tropical paradise, you can still get some good craft brewery stuff. I like it. All right. And you just mentioned this, but I want to, what is Citizen Six? So we're going away from, I think you said it's something Korean Mexican food or something. And I just went, yes, please.
Oh yeah. So they are a cider house and distillery here in Seattle, and they distill, they have like a vodka and bourbon and whiskey and like hardcore booze, but they also make excellent cider. So they have like six different ciders to choose from, hence Citizen Six. So they have like their dry and their regular, but they make some interesting flavors. Like they have a pineapple habanero one that is amazing, honey ginger. So if you're into ciders and you're in Seattle, this is the place to go. And their food is phenomenal. They do like Mexican Korean fusion. So tacos with Korean spicy pork or kimchi bowl. I mean, their menu is just insane, and it's really reasonably priced. Like my husband and I go there so much that the waiters know us.
Nice. You gotta have your own cheers, right?
I know. It's like, I was in there the other day with a girlfriend, and she's like, oh, I didn't recognize you without your husband. I'm like, yeah, I'm cheating on him with... But it's excellent food, and I just love going there. And they have a good craft beer selection. So if you're in Seattle, hit Citizen Six.
And if you're not in Seattle, apparently get to Seattle and go to Citizen Six.
Yes.
I kind of feel, I was just in the Northwest a few months ago, but I can feel another trip coming on in the very near future. Mm-hmm. I'm being inspired. Awesome. Well, hey, Michelle, I know we could keep talking forever, but this sounds like a good place to wrap things up. So I ask every guest the same question at the end of the show. If you could give someone a tip to make today a little better, what would it be?
Have ice cream.
Ah, I love it.
That's my tip.
You know what? Nobody's ever given that one before. And, I don't know if anybody's going to do that, give that one after. So perfect. Michelle, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
As always,
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
Well, the great thing about our podcast, this is a good time for me to tell you, is that we do go for evergreen content, so we don't have to talk about the election at all.
Awesome. Good.
Yeah.
I'm down with that, because that does make me want to drink.
Yeah.